ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Now we'll continue the discussion on the philosophy and psychology of inner contentment. You find a classic illustration of a person who is an embodiment of this inner contentment. Such a person is called Sthita Prajna in Sanskrit, and in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you can find a very elaborate description of his characteristics, how he lives in this world, how he performs his duties and responsibilities, and how he interacts with other people. And you can find a very wonderful illustration. Most of you know about Bhagavad Gita, but still, just a short description. Bhagavad Gita is the most representative textbook on Hindu philosophy and Vedantic wisdom. It contains 700 verses divided into 18 chapters, and it is a very small fraction of a much larger work, the Mahabharata, which has got 145,000 verses in its larger version, and in its shorter version, 100,000 verses, of which Bhagavad Gita is a very, very small fraction, only 700 verses. So in the second chapter, there is a dialogue between the disciple Arjuna and the teacher Lord Krishna. So he asked the simple question. In our context, how does a man who is established in inner contentment, how does a fully contented person look like? How does he act in this world? How does he do his duties and responsibilities? Remember, it is not the picture of a person living in a forest, hermitage, absorbed in meditation. It is comparatively easy to do that. In fact, if you have nothing to do in this world, then, and if you find a person who is always silent, we don't know whether he is really a saint or not. Sometimes we have a very wrong notion that spirituality means silence, a grim expression, a non-nonsense, an absolutely uncompromising expression on the face. Is part of the old fallacy, one of the fallacies that we discussed this morning, you know. Yoga and Vedanta is a kind of world-negating, life-negating, a kind of over-emphasis on asceticism, a withdrawal, a running away from the realities of the world. It's not. It is just the opposite of it. So a spiritually enlightened person who is fully contented with himself, and that's the first condition, is fully contented with himself, is perfectly at home with himself. And so he is perfectly at home with the rest of the world. The inner peace and tranquility expressed as harmony, brotherhood, and friendship when they interact with other people. So we will take up some portions of it. Those of you who are interested in the Siddha Prajna, in fact, we gave a 9-day retreat in Lake Tahoe 2 years back. You can find in the YouTube or in our system the videos, these Siddha Prajna. But we are not going to give the details. I mean, we are not going to deal with very elaborately, but to the extent it is related to the topic of spiritual contentment. Because contentment is essentially a spiritual element that we have to understand. true contentment is impossible in a non-spiritual context. In fact, that should be understood very, very clearly. So, contentment in the true sense of the term, in its fullest degree, is a spiritual experience, nothing less, nothing more. So that should be understood. So here is a question. Arjuna asked the question. You know, Siddha Prajnasi Ka Bhasha Samadhistasya Keshiva Sthiti Kim Kim Asida Siddha Kim Prajeda Kim, like that. This is the question. So Siddha Prajnasi Ka Bhasha, what is his language? Samadhistasya Keshiva. So a person who is perfectly established samadhi. It means a kind of inner contentment. Sthiti Kim Kim Asida Prajeda. How does he sit? How does he walk about? How does he move about? And what language he speaks? It means, how does he interact with other people in the world? Simple question. Now, in answer to this, in 18 verses, Lord Krishna gives a very, very elaborate description of a Siddha Prajna. So, Siddha Dhihi, the word he used, you know, a person who is intellect, buddhi, is sthita, means established, steady, in a state of complete steadiness and tranquility. That's what's called contentment. Now, we discussed this morning three approaches to the problem of contentment and discontentment. One, we feel contented with whatever we are doing without going into much more details, without going very deep into the idea of contentment or its opposite. Just people, you know, we don't have very high ambition. We feel contented with what we are doing, with what we are right now. The other one is a kind of, again, is a discontentment, means where we constantly strive to improve. We are not fully contented. We do right now what we are doing, but we constantly strive, work hard to improve. The third stage, sometimes it could happen this way. It's okay, everything is fine, so long as everything is going our way. But when something changes, we become terribly disturbed, we become discontented. The fourth stage is what we are referring to and what we briefly referred to this morning. That is a state where we won't be disturbed at all, even if we do not get what we are striving to achieve. So it goes beyond success and failure, pain and pleasure, which is a higher state of being established in spiritual wisdom. So that's the meaning of Siddha Dhihi. One who is Dhi means higher wisdom, purified wisdom. This Siddha means fully established, undisturbed, unwavering content. So Kim Asida Vrajeda. How does he sit? How does he talk? How does he move about? These are the simple questions. We come to the 54th verse. From 55th verse to 72nd verse, in 18 verses, Lord Krishna gives a very elaborate description of the characteristics of a man of perfect contentment. Now, you may ask the question, what's the use of giving a long list of characteristics? Now, there's a purpose. And this purpose was emphasized by Shankaracharya, who is responsible for the fact that today we are reading the Bhagavad Gita, because it is Shankaracharya's masterly commentary that made Bhagavad Gita the universal spiritual classic that it is today. Before him, nobody read the Gita. So the gems of the spiritual gems of Bhagavad Gita were brought the attention of the world just because Shankaracharya wrote a commentary. So Swami Vivekananda says, along with so many other innumerable great achievements that this person achieved within a short lifespan of 32 years, Gita is one of the greatest. Swami Vivekananda pays his tribute. Now Shankaracharya gives a reason why Lord Krishna gives a long list of a person who is fully established in wisdom. What's the use of giving? You get a piece of paper, even you get a list of good qualities. It doesn't make much sense, but it makes a lot of sense. Shankaracharya says there's a purpose. It is meant for people like you and me, spiritual seekers. If we carefully read these characteristics, and if we make at least a humble attempt to practice some of these qualities, eventually we will become Siddha Prajnas. You can easily imagine, take an example from everyday life. Suppose you are physically weak, let us hope so, may not be true, but let us hope. Not a very pleasant thing to imagine, but let us hope. And you find a strong man's picture in a wrestler, world freestyle champion, wrestling champion's photo in a newspaper. So you want to be like him. So you want to be strong like him. As we want to be like Siddha Prajna, a man of steady wisdom. So what do? You start going to gymnasium from tomorrow onwards. And you eat good food, do exercise, and you also try to develop the same type of bulging muscles as this Mr. Universe has got. You may not reach that goal, but eventually when you work hard, within a few years, you also will slowly start developing strong muscles. What does it mean? You are becoming physically strong. Similarly, if we try to practice some of these great spiritual characteristics and qualities of a spiritual person, of a man of spiritual wisdom, steady wisdom, Siddha Prajna, we also eventually will become like that. So for spiritual seekers, if you try to say you are not Jesus Christ or Buddha, but you try to behave like Jesus Christ, the same compassion, the same mercy, the humanness, like Buddha, compassion, Shankaracharya, Sri Ramakrishna, any of the great spiritual seekers in the world. You read their life and you try to practice to develop in your own life some of those good qualities. And then you may not become a Buddha tomorrow, but you will certainly have some of the great qualities that Buddha had. So if you meditate on Buddha, you cannot be a cruel monster anyhow. Because what you contemplate on, a little of that you become. If you meditate on a monster, you are likely to become a monster. If not, do it tomorrow. If you meditate on a saint, you may not become that saint, but you will certainly, inevitably, develop some saintly qualities. Similarly, if we try to practice some of the great characteristics of Siddha Prajna, so you see the list, Dukkesu anuddhikdamana, sukhesu vigadaspraha, vidaraga, bhayakrodha, siddhadhihi, muniruchada. You find here people who are not disturbed when there is an adverse situation, who are not overjoyed when everything is going fine, and who are devoid of extreme obsession, extreme aversion, hatred, all these, negative virtues. If we can completely avoid them, we will become somebody like Siddha Prajna. So that's why the long list is given. So it is very important from a spiritual point of view. This is not a religious philosophy. It is pure spiritual common sense. That's what you find here in the 18 verses. It is not a religious doctrine. You don't find a request or a compulsion to go to a place of worship and pray to a particular kind of God and perform certain rituals. No. Here you find a piece of universal spiritual wisdom which everyone can practice. Even an atheist can find some very wonderful spiritual significance in these ideas. So, Shankaracharya gives a very interesting characteristics here. So, the first verse is this. Prajaghadi yada kaman sarvan parthamano gadan atmani eva atmana tushtaka stida prajnaha tada uchyade. Now, before, I'm not going through these verses elaborately. I have already done it in our, you can find in our YouTube or you can find in our, this is all this, the prajna lectures. But I'm going to refer to one important point, and that is very, very significant. If you read the life of St. Francis of Assisi, how do we get the benefit of reading a good book? You suddenly find that morning, or maybe next day onwards, you suddenly find yourself trying to be a little self-controlled, pious, what we call it, sattvic qualities. If you read the Sermon on the Mount, if you read the Upanishads, if you read Dhammapada, the Buddhist tradition, suddenly you find, at least for some hours, you find, well, I should have good thoughts, I should do good things. So reading a book naturally instills in our mind a desire to be somebody like the person whose great spiritual characteristics are mentioned and described in that book. So Shankaracharya says, Sarvatra hi adhyatma shastre kridartha lakshanani yani tani eva sadhanani upadishyante yajna sadhyatvat. It's a very important point. What he says is this: in all spiritual literature, all these great spiritual characteristics are mentioned. Here, for example, the characteristics of a spiritually illumined, elevated person who is perfectly established in spiritual wisdom, tranquility and contentment, inner contentment, spiritual contentment. Why? Yetna sadhyatva means if you try, you also can develop those characteristics. Just as by going to gymnasium every day, you also develop bulging muscles. So also, every day if you practice self-restraint, self-control, and a higher transcendental wisdom, a spiritual perspective, a holistic approach, then you also naturally can develop those characteristics. Yatna sadhidva means if you try, you also can reach that goal. So the list is very important. Tani yatna sadhyani sadhanani lakshanani cha bhavanti tani. So these characteristics are attainable. It's within our reach if we make the slightest effort. So that is the significance of these 18 verses. In fact, it is supposed to be among the most celebrated verses in the whole gamut of world spiritual literature. You need not be a believer in God. We may not go to a temple or a church or any place of worship. If we try to be better human beings, if we try to do our duty better, make our life better, then this is a wonderful manual. So the first verse says, first of all, one should be able to say enough to worldly desires. So that's why prajaghadi yadan kaman sarvan parthamanavaka. Not only external temptations. When we go to a market, when we see wonderful things, where I want to buy that. That's one way of expressing desire. So mind should immediately put a full break. No, enough, I don't want it. Unless it is necessary. So also in your mind, in our mind also, some kind of temptations, desires will arise. As emotions, feelings and different kinds of sthadum nashaknodi sakamaha. What is desire and how desire creates suffering? Dukkha is mentioned here. So long as So the ability to say no is the door that opens to contentment. And that's a very important thing. The ability to say enough, to say no. If we cannot say that, then there will be no end to agony, pain, and anxiety, and discontentment. So the ability to practice self-control, self-restraint, it's not that we should not look for anything. We should not try to achieve anything. No, no. Again, it should be understood very clearly. Siddha Prajna is not a piece of stone sitting there. He's a spiritually enlightened person. See what happened to Buddha. Buddha left his palace, walked about 800 miles, and came to Bodhgaya, sat under a tree. And when he sat, he uttered a mantra. That's what Buddha Vijaya Ashwaghosha's classic is, the Buddha's life. Ikhasane shushyudu me shariram tugasti mamsam cha vilayam cha yatuhu aprapya siddhim bhujanma durlabham naivasanan kayamantas chalishyate. It's a great verse in Ashwaghosha's. He's a great poet who wrote Buddha Vijaya, the classic in Sanskrit language on Buddha's life. Maybe around 4th century AD. So Buddha took a vow. What is the vow? I shall sit under this tree, on this seat. I won't get up till I realize the transcendental, empirical spiritual truth. Let my body be reduced to tugasti mamsam. Let my body be reduced to bones, marrow. Let my body perish. I shall not get up from here without realizing the higher spiritual truth. And he became a Buddha in course of time. After that, he did not sit under the same tree. He got up and walked all over India, all over Indian subcontinent, including Afghanistan, today's Pakistan, Bangladesh, everywhere. So what did he do? After getting enlightenment, after becoming a man of spiritual wisdom, steady wisdom, Siddha Prajna, a man of contentment, what did he do? He started working harder than he worked earlier. Maybe Buddha worked much harder after his enlightenment before he left his palace. Before that, he didn't do anything practically. So a spiritually enlightened person is not an insensitive, world-negating personality. His sensitivity towards the problems of the world, towards other people, it gets a promotion, a spiritual promotion. It gets a sublimation. So, that's because Atmaneva Atmanatushta. He is contented with himself. The fact that I am not this body. I am not this mind or intellect. I am in my true personality transcends my physical, my psychological, my intellectual dimensions. So when he gets linked to this transcendental dimension, then he expands. He doesn't get contracted. He doesn't become selfish. Rather, he becomes selfish if you use the capital S, selfish word, which means he becomes established in self, in Atman, which really makes him unselfish in the true sense of that term. So such a person is a Siddha Prajna. Now, what happens is, then he gets enriched with the spiritual wealth. Where a person may be rich in the worldly sense of the term, but he may be very poor. So there is a verse is there. Nirdhanopi sadatushto api asahayo mahabala nityatrupto api abhunjano pi asama samadarsanaka. So who is a strong person? Who is a contented person? Who is a really... He's a man of achievement. He may be poor, not in spirit, if we use the biblical language. Poor in... rich in spirit, not poor in spirit. He may be poor in the physical sense of the term. He may not have money, physical riches, material riches. But you may be rich in spirit, endowed with spirit. So such a person is called a spiritually enlightened person. So he is the really contented person. He is called Nitya Tripta, is the word in Sanskrit, for a person who is by his very nature in a state of perpetual contentment. So when we look for contentment, we should strive to get a little of this spiritual contentment. If we ever imagine that we can be always contented by acquiring all that the world can offer, all that the senses can enjoy, we will remain perpetually poor and impoverished. That's called nirdhana, means poor, perpetually in a state of poverty. So money may be a symbol of poverty, and physical poverty may be a symbol of spiritual wealth. In that sense, he said, so the real wealth is the spiritual wealth. This is to be understood very carefully. I would say Vedanta is one approach that even atheists can practice. You need not necessarily be a believer in a creator God. You need not necessarily go to a place of worship, a temple or a church. Still, if you read this, you can become spiritual. The idea that one can be spiritual without even necessarily being religious, it is rooted in this idea. The spirituality means acquiring and practicing and implementing in our everyday life, in all our actions and thoughts and words, these characteristics. So gradually we'll come to that. So this is the philosophy, in short, of contentment. Then there is a psychology of contentment that also you find here. Dukkeshu anudhikdhamana sukheshu vigudaspraha vitaraga bhayakrodha stidhihi munihuchyade. Now, he is not perturbed or disturbed when things are not going okay for him. He is not disturbed because he understands that in this world of changes, he cannot have a coin with only one side. Life is like a coin with two sides, pain and pleasure. So once you understand this, we will stop seeking for perpetual happiness because we understand it is only an illusion. It is a mirage. And therefore, he will be free from obsessive desire. Desire is not negated in Vedanta. Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. These four goals of life. You must hold the principles of Dharma or righteousness. Then you can acquire Artha, the means for enjoyment. And then finally, when you realize, when we spiritually evolve and reach a stage where we realize the transitoriness of empirical enjoyments, then we evolve the next stage of moksha, spiritual liberation or transcendental value. But then, even in the midst of trying to live in this world, doing our duty, acquiring wealth, all the tools of enjoyment, we will have somewhere in a corner of our mind, we'll remember that these things are not going to remain for long. All of us do know that. Every educated person will understand that money and wealth and status and all these great things are not going to stay there for long. Every educated person need not be even educated. Even if you live in Wall Street, maybe a Wall Street resident may know better than any of us about the transitoriness of money and wealth, everything. But the point is, that realization doesn't help a person to become spiritual. It doesn't promote you higher spiritual wisdom. Why? Because when we return from the crematorium, we again fall back to the old illusion that we will live forever. When death of a near and dear one happens, we become upset. We place flowers in the obituary. We may go to crematorium. When you return from there, then immediately we again fall back to the old illusion. We are going to live for all times. We are immortal, physically. So, the same mistake we commit, even we are the best educated persons, even we are the best philosophers, we still, for a minute, forget the reality of the transitoriness of material wealth. And for a minute, for a split second, we delude ourselves into thinking that material wealth is going to give us eternal, immortal contentment, which is not really going to happen. So remember, contentment is a sign of a spiritually elevated person in Vedanta. This morning I told you, contentment is our true nature. Spiritual contentment. Contentment is not something that we get, that we acquire by acquiring external things or enjoyment. In fact, when we say no to those things, we become actually contented in the true sense, the spiritual sense of the term. That's why in the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, Yama Nayamasi, Ahimsa Satya Asteya Brahmacharya Aparigraha Tapa Shauja Santosa Ishwarapanidhana. So, Santosa is an important one. Santosa, which is actually called inner contentment. It is an essential spiritual characteristic. Which our true nature, if you remember that we are something that goes beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond the intellect. We have a spiritual dimension. We are the Atman in Vedanta. When we remember that, we feel contentment. A spiritual contentment is our true nature. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, it's called Bhakti Yoga. You find there, the teacher, Lord Krishna, gives a long list of an ideal devotee of God. You can find this applies to all traditions. So the first and one of the most important conditions, characteristics of a real devotee, Santushta Sadadam Yogi Yatatma Dhridhisheha. That's how the verse begins. Santushta means fully established in contentment. So if you find a person, well, I'm praying to God and he's depressed, then it's the greatest blasphemy. It's the greatest sacrilege. If you're praying to God, then you should be contented. You should be happy that you're praying to God. So contentment is a spiritual virtue. It is a necessary virtue for every spiritual seeker. And ultimately, it is the real virtue that every spiritual seeker achieves in its fullness. That's why I say, no, Santushtaka Sadadam Yogi. Santushta Sadadam means he's always in a state of perpetual and complete contentment, inner contentment. So this is a very important thing. I think I referred to the statement in the morning, you know. One tool for torture in hell is to keep you always in a state of dissatisfaction. There is you don't go beyond that. So sometimes we live in this world, deliberately we live in hell when we are always seeking for something new in the worldly sense of the term. So that's why it is said contentment in the higher sense is a necessary spiritual practice for every seeker in yoga. So that's why, you know, tapa, shauja, santosa. This santosa is very important. One of the niyamas, of the 10 disciplines, which are divided into yama and niyama, santosa comes as one of the niyamas in the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, you find in the second chapter. So, but then that contentment is not a jubilation or enjoyment. It is a transcendental state of the mind where the mind is no more affected by the fluctuations that take place in this world. Again, we have to remember, it is not deadening of our senses. Sometimes you're mistaken. Sometimes negation of the realities of life or ascetic deadening of the senses. Rather, it is a spiritualization of our sensitivity. So a person becomes spiritually sensitive. So that's the meaning of this contentment in the yoga. Next characteristic is also very important here. And here, of course, there is one mentioned here. Dukkeshu anuddigdha mana. It means when there is something unhappy happens, anuddigdha mana, your mind is not disturbed. How does it happen? How can we face this problem? How can we prevent our mind falling back into the abyss of discontentment when something unhappy, a tragic, happens in our life? Two methods are there. One, constantly remember that everything in this world is imperfect by its very nature. So, nothing in this empirical world can be perfect by itself, and it cannot be immortal. So, this is a philosophical approach. Another approach is related to this. When we link ourselves to something transcendental, then we are able to look upon these transitory empirical things from a different perspective. If we do not have any higher ideal in life, then the slightest and most insignificant problem will become a great dilemma, a disaster. So one problem is, We do not have a high ideal. And then what happens? The slightest problem in this world becomes a big disaster. I can give an example from everyday life. If you are always living at the physical level, then, and there are people who are obsessed with the physical health, they won't read any book on mysticism, spirituality, or philosophy, or poetry, nothing. Health, people who are obsessed with physical health. If suddenly they find the slightest sign of BP or diabetes, it will have a terrible impact on their system, because they think that there is nothing beyond physical health. But suppose you are writing a book on philosophy or mysticism, or you are a poet, for example. Now, Einstein would not feel upset if suddenly the doctor reports to him, well, your diabetes has slightly increased. At least not to the same extent as a person who doesn't have any higher goal in life. And if you are a spiritual person, then of course it is out of question. So very often the problems depend upon how we interpret our own true personality. If we interpret ourselves only in physical terms, then the slightest physical problem will be a great disaster. Even if you are an intellectual writing a book, or you are a poet writing poetry, then you find, well, you may take care of your health, but you won't be obsessed with physical health alone. You'll be worried if you don't get the book you want from the library. And that worry saves you from the much worse worry about your physical health problems. So as we evolve from the physical to the intellectual, we are able to look upon the physical as just physical. If we remain at the physical level will be the absolute, the highest for us. Now again, if you evolve further, going beyond the physical, the psychological and intellectual, if you look upon yourself as a spiritual being, then you'll be able to look upon all these empirical problems with a smile. Not that you will not attend to the problems. If you have a problem, we go to the hospital, no doubt. But then, it won't upset our personality. So that's why this morning we discussed, we should link ourselves to a higher ideal. And when we link ourselves to a higher ideal, we will be able to look upon the empirical things, problems at the empirical level, from a higher perspective, so it won't make us upset beyond a limit. And then there is a verse, the 57th verse is, Ya sarvatra anabhisneha tattat prapya shubha ashubham na abhinandadi nadveshti tasya prajna pradishtita. It's a very interesting verse. Now you find, if you read the literal translation, sometimes you know we won't get the meaning of it. So the point is, he is a person who is always in a state of non-attachment. Remember that it is not that we become deadened, our senses become deadened. What happens? The problems at the empirical level will not be able to enslave our mind. That's all. That's the only meaning of it. So you have to remember, one of the greatest spiritual personalities of the world, Buddha, after becoming spiritually illumined, after he became Buddha in the true sense of the term, means the enlightened one. After that, he worked hard. He lived for 80 years. You find all great spiritual teachers, after they reached the highest of their spiritual enlightenment, then they didn't sleep the rest of their life. They worked harder than they did earlier. So, you find here anabhisneha, a state of non-attachment, doesn't mean having no connection with anybody. Indifference or negligence, no. They are not particularly obsessed with any ordinary physical, worldly problems, because they are linked to a higher ideal. Problems at the empirical plane did not have a disastrous impact on their mindset. They were able to look upon this world as the world, and worldly subject changes. The world can never be perfect. So once we understand the nature of the world, then the world will not be a problem. A problem is a problem only when we are not aware of its existence. When we know the true nature of this world, then the world will not be a problem. So then this text gives a very interesting description of how we lose our contentment. There is a psychology of discontentment is elaborately described in two important verses in the text, and how we lose peace of mind. So that's the picture is this. It says, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa Sangasteshu Ubajayade Sangha Samjayade Kama Kama Krodho Bijayade Krodhar Bhavadi Sammoha Sammoha Smriti Vibhrama Smriti Bhramsha Buddhinasu Buddhinasa Pranasi. These are two verses. It's very, I shall give in detail. First of all, you know what happens. We look around the world and we see different objects of enjoyment. Vishayan. So we contemplate them. Then we have a desire for them. It could happen both ways. Sometimes we are drawn or attracted towards worldly objects because our mind is full of worldly desires. And sometimes whatever is available around us, we get drawn towards that. It could happen both ways. This need not happen to an enlightened person. So the importance of acquiring spiritual contentment is emphasized here. If you do not try to acquire the inner spiritual contentment, any kind of other, any relative satisfaction, feeling of superficial contentment cannot really give us peace of mind. To establish that point, these are two verses here. So, if we are spiritually enlightened in the true sense of the term, we can live in the marketplace and still think of the higher transcendental things. If not, we may be living in a lonely hermitage in a forest and will be thinking of Trader Joe's, wonderful things available, Trader Joe's or Walmart. So both are possible. So you can find two examples, two grand examples you find. In fact, one of the most illustrative examples are again found in Vyasa Gita, is Mahabharata. As I said, the Mahabharata has got 100,000 verses in a shorter version and nearly 145,000 verses in the bigger version. So there's a small fraction, a dialogue between a saint or a person who tried to be a saint, who did not really succeed in it, as we understand when you go to the story, and a butcher. The butcher is playing the role of a teacher, and the saint is a disciple. So you can imagine the contrast. The butcher living in a marketplace where he is to cut meat every day and sell to his customers, he is speaking the highest spiritual philosophy. To whom? To a person who left his home, went to a forest, meditated for a long time, and did not fully succeed in that because he became disturbed in mind. He became a victim of anger, hatred, and so on, as you find the story. I won't go to the full story. In a nutshell, I will tell you. So there was a saint, a young saint, who left his home when you were very young, went to a forest, sat under a tree, and meditated for several years. And finally, he thought he had progressed a lot. He had become a saint. And then one day he looked at the tree because he was disturbed by two birds were fighting, clamoring, sitting on the branch of the tree. And as he looked, because of his anger, the birds were burned into ashes by his spiritual power. So he was perfectly all right, fine, now I have really achieved something substantial, he thought. And then he left that place and he went about begging. You know, as you find in medieval times in Europe, Franciscan friars, you know, alms for St. Francis, like that, in ancient times, Hindu saints used to go about begging. Saints, and they won't own any property. Even kings and emperors used to become saints and become beggars, begging, going about begging and making pilgrimages, teaching people. They were ascetics, all renouncing ascetics. So this person, he got up from his seat and walked for some distance, went to a home, and he bhavadi bhiksham dehi, he shouted from a distance, means, please give me alms, equivalent to, say, alms for St. Francis, as the Franciscan friars used to do in Europe. You know. So one lady, listening to this, asked him, please wait a minute, I'm not busy. So the saint was very proud of his spirituality. So why? How dare you ask me to wait? And the moment this thought flashed in his mind, crossed his mind, the lady understood. She had not even seen the person. She said, don't get angry too much. There are no birds here for you to burn to ashes. So this man had walked several miles from the place where this happened in the morning. And this was in the evening. Then he was a good man because he had practiced some asceticism. He had made some efforts to practice spirituality. That's a point, that's a lesson. Because even if you make an effort, you will be able to learn your lessons. So the saint did not become angry when the lady told him that no, there are no birds here for you to turn to ashes. Rather, his inner eye awakened. He realized he made a mistake. So in fact, the ability to realize that we have made a mistake is the first sign that we are making progress. We may not have made enough progress, but it shows that we have made some effort. So if you tell somebody, if you find somebody, I'm sorry, not as a formality, mind you, part of the conversational culture, but really that person say, well, I'm sorry. It means that person is an evolved person. That is not a brute. So the saint or the person who tried to be a saint understood that he made a mistake by showing his anger. So he became very humble. So he went to the, when the lady gave him alms, he asked her, "Who is your teacher? From where, who is he, who taught you spiritual practices?" The lady said, "Oh, you won't believe me. There's a man living several miles away from here. And you go to that place." She gave him directions. And this man, the saint, left that place and following her instructions, went to a place. He may have thought he may go to a temple or a hermitage, but you know, he landed in a marketplace, and the person to whom she had directed him was a butcher. And there was a long line of customers waiting for him. So when he reached the butcher's place, the butcher told him, "Oh, yes, you, that lady sent you." Remember, the story must have taken place historically, at least, say, in 2000, 3000 BC. Mahabharata's time is 3326 BC. So something around that. So there was no long-distance communication facilities at that time. And he had traveled a long distance. So this man understood, the saint understood, so this butcher must be an enlightened person, a wise person. Wise man. That's why he could understand that one, this lady had sent me here. So you, that lady sent you here? All right, you sit down. I'm busy. I have to send these customers. I have to sell. Please wait for some time. And he waited. At the end of the day, the butcher gave him a long discourse, which is one of the most sublime portions of this huge classic with more than 100,000 verses. Remember, it is seven times as big as Homer's Iliad, Odyssey, and Virgil's Aeneid put together. Now it's called Vyadha Gita, means a song sung by Vyadha, is the name of the butcher. So remember, a butcher living in a market was a spiritually enlightened person, like a Buddha. A person who left his home, went to a hermitage and practiced meditation could not reach that level. It could be true that the Vyadha, the butcher, must have practiced meditation in solitude for several years. We don't know that part of the story. So the point is, if we have this inner contentment, we can live in this world with all its problems and responsibilities and compulsions, uncertainties, still we can keep our poise, inner poise, without being disturbed. On the other hand, if you do not reach a high level of inner balance, then even if we try to live in solitude, our mind will run riot. Mind may go wild. So essentially, it is all a question of how we practice. But it is important that at the beginning, it is necessary for us to make use of appropriate and positive external circumstances. So the spiritual literature of all traditions declares one important point. For a beginner, it is important to follow certain disciplines. So instead of trying to make a deliberate transition from secular to spiritual, what we must do is to give a spiritual diversion, spiritual orientation to secular activities, so-called secular activities. We see with our eyes, we smell, we see, we touch, we hear, with the different senses of perception or different senses of action with our mind. We interact with the world by seeing, by hearing, and so on. So our mind and our senses of perception and senses of action are always busy. We cannot close our eyes and say, "Tomorrow onwards, I would see only spiritually helpful things." Mentally, you'll be seeing only the opposite of it. what you deliberately decide not to see, your mind will be seeing, even if your eyes are closed. What you deliberately take a decision not to hear, your mind will be hearing. Because mind has a tendency to go straight towards that which you try to prevent it from. So the point is, first step is to give a spiritual orientation to our natural tendencies of behavior. So we have to use computer, we have to use internet, we have to use newspapers. Well, we can direct our natural activities towards spiritually oriented objects. Giving a spiritual orientation to natural tendencies. That's the first step. So, once we achieve that, then what happens? We will not be obsessed with those things. So, the verse says, first, we get attached to external things. And then what happens? We develop a strong desire. And then we try to achieve those things that we desire for. When we do not succeed, we become angry. And when we become angry, what happens? We become disappointed. And then what happens? Slowly our mind goes down. We become discontented. So contentment, in the true sense of the term, is a transcendental experience. We may not get it right now, but we can prepare our mind not by shutting out negative tendencies, but by giving a positive orientation to our natural tendencies of mind and senses of action and senses of perception. This is a very, very rational and scientific method that you find prescribed in the Gita. It's a very important thing to remember. In the yoga also, yama and niyamas, you know. Before we practice asana, pranayama, all these things which will generate energy and heat and which will make our nervous system hyperactive, it is important to get established in yama and niyama, the 10 disciplines. Because without getting fully established in these 10 moral disciplines, if we practice other ipa, pranayama, asana, etc., then that energy, the enthusiasm, the heat that is generated by pranayama and asana will take us in the wrong direction. So to shut down those negative channels opening to negative sources, to divert into positive channels, we practice yama and niyama. It's a very important discipline mentioned in yoga. We'll discuss those things maybe in tomorrow's session. Now we'll have interaction, question, answer from 4 o'clock to 4:30. So we will have interaction. So you are welcome to suggest topics for discussion through questions. Okay.